The Monty Show, Wednesday, September 26th. The Cubs are already losing.
Come on, you got to be more positive.
I don't know if I can be. Well, keep you updated. The Cubs are only a half game in first place. The Brewers, of course, are beating the hapless and terrible, awful St. Louis baseball Cardinals. I mean, they don't have a football team there anymore, so they couldn't really be anything else. But I am a disgruntled Cubs fan. I just am warning you now. We'll keep you updated on that. Just right now, off the top of your head, do the Cubs win the division?
Yes. Yes.
No, they won't. No, no. We got to talk top five, bottom five, the Monty Show power rankings. A lot of surprises in there. Hey, by the way, how about the NBA season? About to tip off, so we'll over under wins. By the way,
we should just turn the music down and get into the stuff.
Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. So the Cubs are actually winning. I'm just being kind of a jerk about it. The Cubs are actually winning over the Pittsburgh Pirates at Wrigley Field tonight, 6-2. Quintana, who I think has been one of the most significant failures in the Theo Epstein era, is just not a guy you can count on. So the Cubs give him six runs. He gives up a home run in the first inning, another home run in the bottom of the fifth when he's up 6-1, and then a triple down the line. Because, well, Kyle Schwarber's not exactly an elite defender in left field.
Right.
Quintana picked the guy off at third, so it worked out well.
Huh.
But why are you so confident that this team will find a way to win the division?
Because it's just who they are. They've found a way to get wins when they shouldn't have gotten them. Like, you said it perfectly yesterday, or was it the day before? Like, they have the big moment. They can get it done when they need to get it done. And they get, and I've been saying the whole time, they're going to win the division by less than two games. They're not going to win it by five or six. Like, that was never going to happen. Brewers are too good this year. They're overachieving by too much. And that's one thing I'd like to point out. The Brewers weren't supposed to be this good, and that's not the Cubs' fault. It's not fair to penalize the Cubs because the Brewers have overachieved.
But it has nothing to do with the Brewers. The Cubs do not have a good pitching staff, from the number one starter to the closer in the bullpen. You have a manager in Joe Maddon that sometimes enjoys letting guys like Pedro Strop run the bases. So he pulls his hamstring and he's out the rest of the regular season. And you're just hoping that he's a semblance of himself when the playoffs start, if you make the playoffs. You know, you keep running a guy in Mike Montgomery out there because you made a horrible decision on Yu Darvish. And it's not being an armchair quarterback. When the rumors came out that the Cubs were chasing Yu Darvish, what did I say? I said, that's a horrible effing idea. That Yu Darvish is going to be a guy that's going to take your money and give you very little in return. And he really hasn't pitched for you.
Yeah.
What, he make eight starts?
Yeah, it's so little, I don't even know.
A stress reaction in his elbow? Like, I mean, it's horrendous. If you look at the Cubs starting pitchers, it's the one Achilles heel in this team. Now, granted, they haven't hit very well. They have been bang or bust at the plate this year. And we talk about their approach, and I don't know why Joe Maddon felt it necessary to change his hitting coach with one of the best offensive teams in baseball. Chili Davis clearly has had a struggle reaching some of these guys. So you go out and you get a Daniel Murphy who has sort of contributed, but this is a guy, you know, who is supposed to be giving you quality ABs, and he at times hasn't. I look at who's catching tonight. Victor Caratini's catching tonight. Why? Why?
I don't know.
I don't understand. Victor Caratini comes up with the bases loaded. Kyle Schwarber draws a walk with the bases loaded to drive in a run. And what's Caratini do? Rolls over on a little ground ball to first base. Like a wasted at bat because you don't have a number two catcher. With all due respect to Caratini, you don't have a number two catcher on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
There are easy, obvious fixes. And yet Theo wants to go spend his money on, you know, dead arm pitchers. He wants to give up guys like Eloy Jimenez to the Chicago White Sox to get, you know, a guy in Quintana who really has been a massive disappointment for you. And granted, you can go up and down this rotation. Who's your ace on this team right now?
I don't think you have an ace. I don't think you have like a number, bona fide number one. But Look, we disagree on this. I'm not saying you're 100% wrong or you're way off the chair or anything. What I am saying, though, is I think you paint them in a broad brush of negativity for the most part. They don't have good at bats. Like, they don't pitch well. During a game, it goes up and down. He didn't give up four run home. Like, he didn't give up grand slams or anything. He gave up two solo home runs. And I get that that's not when they give you six runs. The next inning, you'd love to have a shutdown inning. That'd be nice. You are on
the verge of losing the National League Central. But that's not their mindset,
and he's not thinking that. Yes, it is.
Very clearly, that's their mindset. Very clearly. They are talking about it today. Anthony Rizzo on ESPN 1000 Chicago today said that our only goal is to win the NL Central. And I agree with him. How do you go through 2018 and lose the NL Central? It's a massive failing. There's no other way to look at it. If you're going up to the plate, if you're showing up at the ballpark today, Joe Maddon, and I do criticize Joe Maddon for some of the cutesy things he does. He did something very smart today. He said, no batting practice. Everybody gets here at 5 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock, which is exactly what they should do because they look like a team that's burned out. They're having, and this is what you and I disagree on. They're professional hitters that are having really bad at-bats. Kyle Schwarber, when he drew that walk with the bases loaded, swung at a pitch that bounced a foot in front of the batter's box. Not like on the plate or at his foot. He swung at a pitch that bounced a foot in front of the batter's box. How do you explain that with the bases loaded and the National League flag on the line?
But or the National League Central flag. What did he do the rest? What was the result of the at-bat?
He didn't swing the bat. That was the result. He walked.
On two really good takes, right?
Sure. But then you have a guy in Caratini who comes up. You've just watched Kyle Schwarber walk with the bases loaded. Caratini comes up, swings at the first pitch, which was a foot outside and rolled over to first base.
Yeah, that's a bad at-bat. I don't disagree with that.
A bad at-bat? That's the at-bat that cripples you. With two outs and the bases loaded, a guy's just walked in a run. You swing at the first pitch and roll over to first base. That's the at-bat that loses you the game. You know, like you're not knocking the pitcher out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean,
I understand it. I get where you're coming from. I understand.
This is a mediocre baseball team. And I don't know why it's so taboo to say that.
It's not taboo, but look, I feel like, yeah, maybe my positivity around the team is just unfounded, and I don't know what I'm talking about. But at some point, it can't just be – you can't say – the Kyle Schwarber bat's a great example. Well, he swung at a pitch that was bounced in front of the plate. But he also had a really good at-bat the whole way. Like, if you look at the at-bat in its entirety, pitch by pitch, he made a mistake and swung at that pitch. Then he had two really good takes, showing that he has a really good eye and he's disciplined and didn't roll over. And his at-bat produced an RBI. Like, that's that he produced a run. Whether it's a base hit, a walk, or a hit by pitch, you got to run in.
He on that pitch he swings at, and this is my point, and maybe we're too far into the minutia of baseball, I don't know. He could have been 2-0. Instead, he was 1-1. You're a pitcher. How much difference is that?
I mean, it's different, yeah.
Massive difference.
I don't think it's a massive difference. I think there's a big difference between, like, 3-0 and, you know, like 1-1. There's a big difference
with
there.
The bases loaded at 2-0. He has to come to you, or he's going to walk in a run. At 1-1, what did he do? The next pitch, he threw another pitch at his foot, which he took, by the way, didn't swing at it. But that's the difference. You're willing to overlook that. I'm not. You're willing to overlook the fact that you have a guy in Theo Epstein who bought John Lester, who bought Kyle Hendricks, who bought Cole Hamels.
Those guys have been good investments. Lester's been good. Like, you know, Hamels has been decent. He's been up and he's been down, just like everybody else. Like, his first three starts were amazing. The change of scenery clearly helped him. But he's been just pedestrian the rest of the way. The question is, for Hamels, what will define that is, if you get to the postseason, what kind of contribution does he give you? Because he's got the experience and he's been there.
John Lester's your number one pitcher. That's a problem. It's great, Cub fans, and I include myself in that, but here's the hard reality. This is the truth. 2016 is over. It's all good that John Lester played a huge role in that World Series. He's not the same guy. Okay? Meanwhile, you have the Houston Astros, who, what have they done? They've completely remade their rotation. And now they're the best team in baseball again. They're repeating as the best team in baseball again. Because they continue to get better. They're without Correa for a good part of this year. Anybody notice that? No. Because Bregman's been fantastic. You know, like, we can sit here and talk about how, well, John Lester's a good pitcher. Well, he's not a number one pitcher on a team that's supposedly the best team in baseball, which they're not by a stretch the best team in baseball. Okay, well, throw out John Lester. Kyle Hendricks has had a very, very roller coaster season. He's turned it around. Okay, he's fine. As like a number four or five, right? Well, he's your number two. Cole Hamels is your number three. Okay, Quintana is a complete disaster. You cannot count on him for a quality start. He will terrify me the moment he picks up the ball in the postseason. And Mike Montgomery, he's just not a major league starting pitcher. That guy's a long reliever at best. You know, so the continued outlay of money to buy your starting pitching is what's killing the Cubs, right? You went out and bought Brandon Morrow, who was a second-rate closer to begin with. He's done for the year with this bicep injury. It's over. So now you're wanting Pedro Strop in his crooked hat to close games for you. Oh, it's cute that he can bat in a game where he doesn't need to bat and run down to first and pull a hamstring doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, so who's closing games for you? I don't know either. Brandon Kinsler. Okay, well, you brought him in the fourth last night. Like, what are we doing?
The best they can. At this point, not good enough. Like, I get it's not good enough, but that's the best they can do right now.
Theo Epstein's been terrible at buying pitching over his career, and this Cubs team is a perfect example of that. Yu Darvish, Tyler Chatwood, and Jose Quintana are three complete busts that he is committed to for the long term at big dollars, and there's no getting around that. This team's not winning this division. It's not going to happen. And we can sit here and fantasize about it, and it's all well and good that, you know, they're beaten on a, you know, on a Pittsburgh team tonight, but you've lost your last two games to this Pittsburgh team. Yeah, like how are you losing the first two games and blowing your lead? Meanwhile, the Brewers are beating the St. Louis Cardinals, who are fighting for their playoff life. Mm-hmm. And you can't beat a Pittsburgh team that's done. Like, that just tells me this team is not here. And I actually agree with what you've said, which is maybe it's better that they I'd love it if they got and went through and won the World Series. That's not what's best for this team for the next 3 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I would rather miss the postseason altogether this year if it meant that we'd win back-to-back World Series the next 2 years. Because this team is depleted. Like, the offseason can't get here soon enough. Chris Bryant's got to have shoulder surgery. Out of the lineup again tonight. You know, anyway, I've spent 13 minutes bitching about the Cubs. You know, here we are again, though. Here we are again, second and third, one out. Tommy La Stella, all world pinch hitters at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I think La Stella's filled his role well. I don't know what the problem with him is.
Do these two guys score?
Yeah, I think they probably do.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Joe's batting the pitcher eighth again tonight. Quintana, who's now out of the game. Joe's batting the pitcher eighth tonight. So David Bodie's on deck. So we'll see. We'll see. I look around baseball, and there are a lot of teams that I think are in much better positions than the Cubs are. And you'll think I'm being a homer. I think the Padres are in a phenomenal position. Are they in a better position than the Cubs? No, they're not. Because the Cubs have long-term, you know, players they control, and you know,
the Cubs are in a position to win. They're just not in the position to win at the rate you want them to.
Which is either win now, which they're not, or long-term, which they're not.
Well, so how do you know that they're not winning long-term? Where do you get that?
Because you win and lose with pitching.
Okay. So you're saying that they're not in any position to change their situation. They can't do anything. They can't, like, make any kind of moves.
You're married to Yu Darvish. You're married to Tyler Chatwood. I mean, those two guys are here in the long term. You're married to Brandon Morrow, who's going to probably have surgery. And all I'm saying is that you don't have a quick fix for this pitching staff. And do you trust Theo Epstein to go out and buy starting pitching? Because I really don't, not with his track record.
Yeah, I don't trust his talent evaluation. And that's really a term we throw around a lot in sports, right? Talent evaluation. what can this guy do for me now? What can he do for me in 3 years if he's going to be here? And if he's not here, what can I get for him in the long term based on his talent that he brings to the table?
Now, you want to talk about the draft? Sure. We can talk about the draft.
Yeah, he's a killer in the draft.
You want to trade for position players from Anthony Rizzo to Daniel Murphy? I mean, we can go through this repeatedly. And these are all guys, if you look around the diamond from Schwarber to, I mean, again, KB, Addison Russell's a trade, even though that situation now with the domestic violence suspensions going sideways. Javier Baez, you know, Ben Zobrist was a great pickup, helped you win a World Series in 2016. He can build a roster. He cannot buy pitching. And I don't know how you explain that.
Well, and it's what we always say. If you're buying pitching, you're not going to win long term. I mean, you got to develop your pitching. And that's why, that's really your point on the Padres. The Padres are in such a good position because they've got just guys, guy after guy after guy after guy coming up.
Right. So you're going to have five starting pitchers, but you're also going to trade some of that starting pitching to get you top talent.
Yeah.
So I still maintain the Padres are in one of the best positions in baseball.
Yeah, no doubt.
No question about it. I think the Nationals with what's going on with Bryce Harper, it's weird. Before we get to our power rankings, it's odd to me that you have Harper saying that he cherishes his last home game tonight, taking a bow to the fans. And after the game, saying that this is my home, this is the only place I've known. You know, asking last night, am I in the organization's future plans? Like, what the hell is going on with the Washington Nationals? I don't for a second believe that Mike Rizzo, the GM there, hasn't talked to Bryce Harper or isn't communicating with Bryce Harper about his intentions or desires.
Well, do you take Bryce to be that guy who plays games in the media?
I don't know. I would hope not. I mean, I would hope not. It kind of feels like that, not to be a jerk about it, but I don't understand what's going on.
I mean, if you're Bryce Harper, though, I almost feel like it would be somewhat foolish to be a one-team guy with the Nationals. This is Mike Trout with the Angels. This is any other guy you want to point to. Like, Mike Trout with the Angels isn't going to win.
Well, Vegas says he's going to be a Cub next year.
Well, that might be true, but that's not going to get you better pitching, and you're still going to be pissed at their staff.
And you're stuck with Jason Hayward's contract.
But, like, so, Jason Hayward has come through. The guy has done his job. Like,
well, he hit a home run tonight, and he's been a better player this year.
Like, yeah, and that's my point. Like, I had to sit and endure the entire year. Well, he can't hit. He can't hit. Waste of a contract. Waste of a contract. Can't hit. The guy can't even play pepper. Like, get the hell out of here, man. He's a gold glove defender. He throws people out. He's saving you runs, even though he's not producing. Right, and I get that he's killing rallies, and there's been many, many, many times.
But let's be honest. The Jason Hayward contract is one of the worst contracts in all of baseball.
What makes it that, though?
He's making an excessive amount of money and not producing at the plate. And this year, we can sit here and we can fantasize about all the great things that Jason Hayward's done for this team in the field, and I don't even disagree with that. But let's not pretend that Jason Hayward's a guy who is worth every penny you're paying him just because he can throw guys out from right. Because I got news for you. He's not. His contract... And I'm not a guy that generally walks around with a guy's contract in his pocket and waves it in his face all the time. His contract is freaking horrendous. I mean, it's by rank, and I think it was in spring training that I saw this, that Hayward's contract is the fifth worst contract in baseball, in all of baseball. Like, he's making, and I don't want to guess at what his number is. I need to look it up. But he's making... He had an eight-year, $184 million contract signed before the 2016 season. They're married to him until 2024. 2024, I'm sure, is the year that they're done with him. He hits 38% ground balls. 38% of the balls he hits are on the ground.
Yeah, you're right. Eight-year, $184 million. He'll be a free agent in 2024. So 2023 will be the last full season he plays as a Cub on that contract.
His batting average on balls in play, 286. 154. I don't. Offensively, he's a disaster. He's a fifth outfielder, a fourth outfielder, rather. That's what... If you sign Bryce Harper... Would he pay Bryce $30 million a year?
I'm paying him to play left field. That's what I'm paying him to do.
Well, yeah. And I guess you're going to trade Kyle Schwarber for some pitching then.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what you...
Depends on Bryce's contract, though, like how the length of it, you know?
Yeah, and what happens with Addison Russell. Anyway, I could talk Cubs baseball all day. I really could, but please do not defend Jason Hayward's offense. Because he is... Listen, I respect that he is a really good defensive player, but, I mean, bro. I don't even have words for how bad his offense is. I mean, for a guy that's making that kind of money, come on. That's a... And I know it's the Cubs, I get it, but... Dude, anyway. If you sign Bryce Harper, do you play... What do you do? Do you play him in right? You would play him in left.
Yeah.
Who are you playing in right?
Hayward.
Yeah, I guess. Be a pretty good outfield, I guess. You know, get to. I don't know.
So here's the thing:
Can they jump really high to catch all the home runs they give up?
This is where I'm at. You want to sit Hayward and put Homie in right field, Bryce in right field, and you want to keep Kyle Schwarber in left field, and then you're gonna bitch about his defense and the fact that he takes terrible bats.
If you sign Bryce Harper, you have to trade Kyle Schwarber for pitching. You have to. No choice. You got to send Kyle Schwarber to the Mets and try get... You need an ace. You need an ace. You have got to trade Kyle Schwarber and a package of players to get a number one pitcher, a DeGrom, a Syndergaard. I mean...
DeGrom's the guy. I mean, he's had a better year. There's no doubt.
But that's what you have to do. There's no way about it. When you have a guy that... In your World Series year, had a .306 on base percentage in Jason Hayward. You can't have a defensive liability, and admittedly, Schwarber's a much better defender than he was several years ago. But you gotta have it together, especially if you don't have pitching. So here, near there, can we get to the power rankings, please?
Yeah, let's talk football.
I it's obnoxious, isn't it? You really dislike. You really dislike me talking Cubs.
Yeah. Yes.
But am I ever just, frankly, am I ever just wrong?
You're not wrong about the team. Where we disagree is the perspective on the game. You say, well, that's an awful at-bat. That's an awful at-bat. And I'm like, no, it's not an awful at-bat. The Caratini at-bat, yeah, you're awful. You're garbage. Like, you're a triple-A player that they had to bring up because they don't have a second catcher. I agree with you on that. Like, Schwarber's at-bat... Where he's swung at the first pitch, or I think it was the first pitch in the at-bat, that was that slider that bounced the foot in front of the plate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bad pitch to swing at. He's a human being. He produced a run. Like, that's where we differ. Like, the at-bat was productive. And that's all you can ask from a guy.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I guess. I just completely disagree. I 100%. I think... You're fighting for your playoff life, and you can't... Anyway, let's not go back to it. I don't happen to agree with you. All right, let's do our top five, bottom five in the NFL. Every Wednesday on the Monty Show, we give you our power rankings. Let's start with the top five teams in the National Football League. The fifth best team is the New Orleans Saints. I love what Drew Brees is doing. I took a lot of time today looking at what he is. And it's remarkable how much he passes the football. You know, they're number two in passing offense. He's number three in yards, number two in passing efficiency, number one in completions. Like his completion percentage, you realize, is 81%. He's completing 81%.
Yeah.
And there's a stat that Pro Football Focus puts out called anticipated result. When he throws the football, he is number one in anticipated result, which is to say the pass will be completed, which is a rating of how clutch you are. He's number one in that stat again. He is having a career year. Now, I wish that they had a little bit better defense. I love the fact that their offensive line is a top 10 offensive line, and their receiver core is the sixth best receiver group in the NFL. But they allowed 9 pass plays of at least 30 yards and 5 touchdown passes of 30 yards or more, both of which are the most in the NFL.
But you're still not going to outshoot them. That's the problem. And I'm the guy, and again, this is a strategic difference, like not between us, but just when you ask people, well, what do you want in your team? I would rather have an average defense and a guy who can just light it up offensively than an elite defense in Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears offense. Like, that's where I'm at with it. So, you know, the fact that when we're doing our rankings here, my take on the Saints is they're a really, really good team.
And, weaponized offense.
Yeah, just dominant. And I think when they go, when you put them up against, like, the Rams defense, let's say, at one point, I mean, who are you taking there? Because it's just such a grudge match. I don't know. How will the Saints' offensive line perform? Because that will determine the game.
And we'll talk about the Rams, but if they have injuries in that secondary and now Tlaib looks like he's done,
yeah,
that's a real problem. Marcus Peters, we'll see if he plays tomorrow night. But that secondary is really important to that football team. The New Orleans Saints are our fifth best team. Our fourth best team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have one fatal flaw. They just don't get into the red zone. But when they do anything else, they're pretty good. It scares me a little bit that Blake Bortles does not have wide receivers. They don't really have offense. He's number one with accurate passes dropped in the NFL with 9, which means he threw a pass, it hit the receiver in his hands, and they dropped it. That's happened 9 times. And here's the worst part. He's also number one in the NFL with 7 drops when he had a clean pocket. So he had good protection. He threw an accurate ball, and they dropped it.
Yeah.
You got to get better wide receiver play in Jacksonville. I think if they had better wide receiver play, I think he'd be a much better quarterback. And their defense is really good. Number 4 in total yards and yards a game. That's why Jacksonville, in my opinion, is the fourth best team in the NFL.
Yeah, and this is really what separates teams like Jacksonville from the Rams, is stats like that, where, like, we're sitting here comparing best teams in the NFL. The Rams don't have receiver problems. They don't have any kind of quarterback issue, no offensive issues. They're covered. So that's why they're a better team, because I would say that the Jags defense is up to snuff with that Rams defense. I think it's very close. I mean, the Rams defense probably edges them, but it just depends on the game. And so I think you're exactly right. For Jacksonville, you got to catch the football, bro. Like, that's what you're paid to do when you drop the ball. It's that simple.
Do you realize that the Jaguars have only been in the red zone 5 times?
You better be able to run a seam route.
That's second worst in the NFL, only to the Cardinals. And the worst part is they've scored points on just 30% of their drives. That's horrendous.
That's rough, bro. And that's awful.
I think, one, Fournette being hurt really hurts the Jacksonville Jaguars. But they just don't have a lot of receivers. Jacksonville's the fourth best team in the NFL. Amazingly, they're one of the 4 best teams in the NFL without wide receivers. Number 3, oh boy, did he make a huge difference. Carson Wentz is back for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think it really just comes down to their opening drive. 12 plays, 79 yards and a touchdown. 2 plays into that drive, they went no huddle. Shotgun, 9 plays in a row.
Fire.
And they dominated. And I love that about him. They're 25th in offense, 23rd in passing. Before Wentz got back, he made an immediate adjustment to that. Their defense is 3rd. The 3rd ranked defense, 8th in points against, 22nd in points for. So what is this all? What does that mean to you? You're not giving up a whole lot of points. The problem is you're not scoring enough points because, well, you had quarterback issues. Carson Wentz is back. I think the Eagles are going to fly, man.
Yeah, they're in good shape. They're largely the same team. That's pretty much all you have to say. I mean, there's not much difference. And when Wentz is on the field, he was going to be the MVP. Now he's at a point where he's on the comeback trail, and he's going to be, what is the award, most improved or best comeback player of the year? Like, he's going to get
comeback
something.
Comeback player of the year.
You know, he's going to get something. So I think they're in fine shape. Totally agree.
Because I have no life, I was also looking at special teams ranks today.
Okay.
Their average starting field position is the 23-yard line. That's not good. That's 30th in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you'd like to see their return game get better as well. But the Philadelphia Eagles are the 3rd best team in the NFL. The number 2 team in the National Football League is the Kansas City Chiefs. And it is all about Patrick Mahomes. He is very good. Number 3 passer. But would it surprise you to know that Patrick Mahomes is 23rd in passing attempts? He is 7th in deep balls, and he's only taken 4 sacks. So what does that tell you? When he moves around, He is very good. And we saw that this weekend with that crazy scramble where he ran all the way across the field, threw the ball to the back of the end zone for that touchdown. I really like what he does. Number one in TDs with 13. How many interceptions has Patrick Mahomes thrown?
Goose egg, baby.
Zero. He has not thrown an interception yet. He's number one with 5 touchdowns, over 20 yards. Number two with 3 touchdowns under pressure. The guy's balling out. And we've talked about this several times over the last few weeks. I think he's the real deal.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, when young quarterbacks come into the league, first of all, guys who sit behind a starter do much better, which he did, which Mahomes did. And then we were also talking about, you know, young quarterbacks who come from the college game and are asked to be runners and you know, win games with your legs. I think Mahomes has done a great job not trying to play hero ball and pull a Garoppolo. What he does is he's mobile, but he throws the ball. He's mobile to deliver the ball instead of mobile to get the first down with his legs, and I think that's massive.
We can stop saying nice things about the Chiefs because we got to talk about their defense, and they suck.
Yeah.
Their defense is really bad. They're 31st in the NFL. They've allowed 92 points. Here's a stat for you, Jake. They are the only 3-0 team in the Super Bowl era to allow more points, 92 points they've given up. There's only 3 other teams in the Super Bowl era. And the last was the Rams in 2000, who gave up 94.
Man.
They're number one in points for. They're 29th in points against. That's terrible.
I mean, you suck.
I think that eventually comes back to get you. It's all nice and neat that he runs around and he's elite on the run, and their offensive line is actually, you know, probably somewhere around 9 or 10 in the NFL. They have a pretty decent offensive line, which is really cool. At some point, that's going to come back to get you.
Yeah, because you'll face an elite defense, and they'll be able to slow that down, and you're not going to be able to outscore them.
Yep, surprise, surprise. The number one team in the National Football League right now, in this man's opinion, the Los Angeles Rams. The LA Rams are number one, and again, I think it's all about their quarterback. What is the common denominator here? The Rams, Chiefs, Jags, Eagles, and Saints, we talked all about their quarterbacks, and they're getting elite quarterback play. Jared Goff is efficient. His depth is unbelievable. His average passing attempt is over 10 yards now, which tells you he is driving the ball down the field. He is his red zone percentage, they're scoring touchdowns 60% of the time, which is a 10% increase this year. That's all about your quarterback. I mean, they're number one in pass protection, number one against the run block, number four in points scored. Oh, by the way, their defense is freaking unbelievable. They're the number two defense in the NFL, 13th against the run, number two against the pass. They're the sixth best pass rush in the league. It's funny, though. That stat right there that I just gave you, they're the 13th best team against the run. With all of that Aaron Donald money, and that Ndamukong Suh talent, and they're not great against the run.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they matriculate to the top of the run defense rankings, if that actually happens. But any doubt they're the best team in the NFL?
No, I don't have any doubt right now. I mean, again, the season is still young. And that's the thing I would say is that you have to be careful with, you know, they're having a great year. Like, Drew Brees is having a great year. He's had a first good quarter of the season, and if he can stay consistent, that's, you know, he's going to have a great year. But the Rams, I think the Rams got to stay healthy. If they continue to get, you know, if they continue to lose guys, that's going to be tough for them. If you were to lose, you know, Ndamukong Suh, that would be massive for that team.
Oh,
that
man.
Would crush them. You know, that would completely change the dynamic, and you'd be asking more of Goff. But what's so great about them, and this is what most other teams don't have, you have balance. You've got the yin and the yang. Your defense can put up points. Your offense is putting up points. Everybody's good. The defense isn't on the field for a gazillion plays a game.
Then why
it's
are you
awesome.
Giving up 5 yards a rush?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Rushing defense is an issue. So the top 5 teams in the NFL, according to the Monty Show, number 5, the Saints. Number 4, the Jags. Number 3, fly, Eagles, fly. Number 2 is the Patrick Mahomes. And number 1, the LA Rams, baby. Those are our top 5 teams. By the way, I wanted to tell you that I did try to figure out where your crappy your Minnesota Vikings are. No, I'm just being a joke.
They're not in the top 32. They're awful.
They're awful. They're 47th of 32.
Yeah, they're not ranked.
I landed on them at number 9. So you were correct. I was thinking they were probably somewhere around 14, 15. I put them at number 9. And I think the thing that is very telling is that their offensive line's a problem, I think. They're one of the five worst offensive lines, especially in the left tackle. And they actually, which I did not realize, tied a record for fewest attempts by any team in NFL history running the ball. They only ran the ball six times against the Bills.
Yeah.
A lot of that is they were behind. A lot of that is Dalvin Cook is hurt. A lot of that is they probably don't believe much in Latavius Murray as a ball carrier. But anytime you don't run the football almost at all in an NFL game, you know you're in trouble. So I was probably a little generous, but I'll put the Vikings as the ninth best team.
And I'd just like to say, before mm-hmm. we get away from the Rams, mm-hmm. I am pro Rams this week in fantasy. I do have Goff and the Rams defense.
You started Goff over Cousins. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty smart. Let's hope you didn't start the Arizona Cardinals, because their defense sucks. Speaking of the Cardinals, the five worst teams in the NFL. Why don't we start with number five, the Houston Texans? Now, there is some bright side here, okay? I thought you had a much better performance out of J.J. Watt. Caused some turnovers, got to the quarterback. He was in the backfield. But they're one of the worst tackling defenses in the NFL. They're one of the worst offensive lines. And you still have a very decent quarterback.
Yeah.
See what I did there? Very decent quarterback in Deshaun Watson. But he's been pressured on 44% of his dropbacks. They have a lot of flaws, and I think their head coach is one of them.
Yeah.
But I think they're the fifth worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, and they're that organization that's just in the meat grinder, man. They've been in it for like the last 10 years. I mean, you're going through like three, four head coaches at a time. You know, you draft Deshaun, he's looked great, had the knee injury. Oh, man, season's over. And he was having a great rookie campaign.
Yeah.
You know, Watt has a little bit of an injury here, a little bit of an injury there. You haven't been able to put it together.
Can't get Jadeveon Clowney on the field.
Yeah, you know, like, and then you've got O'Brien just making an idiot of himself with some of those play calls. Like, you're right. I mean, I think it might be time for a change, but yeah. I don't know who the replacement will be at this point.
Yeah, they're 0-3, and one other line of scrimmage stat on them. The Texans' offensive line has controlled the line of scrimmage only 43% of the time. They're losing 57% of the snaps on the offensive line.
It's embarrassing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Think about it. 57% of your snaps on the offensive line, you lose your position battle.
Yeah.
That I don't even know how you play football at that point. The Texans are the fifth worst team. How about this? A big, big leap up the board. They were the worst team in the NFL last week. Now they're only the fourth worst team. Because they whooped up on those Vikings. It's the Buffalo Bills Mafia. You saw the Viking game, right? That's where they're the fourth team. And it's really because Josh Allen leapt at midfield, which was awesome. The funny thing is, they're a top 10 run defense. I didn't even realize this until I really looked at them today. And they're a top 10 run defense. They're a top 5 total defense. But they're the 31st offense in the in the NFL, 29th points for. So they've scored almost fewer points than almost any other team in the league, 29th out of 32 in points for, 9th in points given up. So their defense is really good. Their offense is terrible, and this is another team that's all about those wide receivers. Their wide receiver is, as a group, rank dead last, 32nd in the
NFL.
It's
rough, man. It's rough. And that's why we say, like, when you're talking about Josh Allen and his performance, his individual performance last week was really good. For what he did in week two, like, the progression to week three was excellent. And that's all you need to see out of the guy. I mean, the leaping over guys, that's not who he is. He's not going to continue to be that guy. Like, that was just a nice cute play. Like,
you can't.
That's not who you are, bro. But we at the end of the day, you need him to be able to stand back there and deliver the football to the guys 5 years from now who are on that team as big-time wide receivers.
Well, and if he can run the way he did in the red zone and score touchdowns like that, and I mean, that's really where he will be good. That's why the Buffalo Bills are only the fourth worst team in the NFL. Number three, the San Francisco 49ers are one of the three worst teams in the NFL. That's because they suck defensively. They're 32nd in defense, dead last. They're 32nd in tackling, dead last. They can't cover. And oh, by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo is missing a knee ligament. They've got all kinds of trouble. The 49ers are just not very good. They're the third worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, injuries have just plagued this team. I mean, I think it flies under the radar that Breida's not healthy either. They're running back. I mean, he's been a big contributor for them. And they just haven't been the same team since, you know, the Harbaugh era ended. They were this great team with Kaepernick, and you had all the linebackers. And
Jim Tom Sula.
You had Navarro Bowman, and, you know, you just had guys.
Yeah.
You had Frank Gore. Like, you just had a great team, and that's over now.
Yep, they lack character. I would agree with you on that. So I don't know what you do with Beathard back there, but...
You just take your beating.
I think you do. I think they're going to sign Tom Savage. We'll see. But the 49ers are the third worst team, and you don't have to go very far. In fact, just drive over the Bay Bridge to find the second worst team in the NFL, Chucky and the Raiders. I mean, there's just so many penalties against that team. They're the second most penalized team in the NFL. They turn the ball over consistently. Their offensive line's bad. They're 30th in rushing the passer. And by the way, here's a legitimate question now that I didn't think that I would ever ask. Is Derek Carr a franchise quarterback?
I think it's unfair to be asking that right now.
Is it?
I think it is because, I mean, what are you giving him to work with?
Well, there's been a lot of turnover on the coaching staff, obviously. There's not been, he's had a pretty stable front office. The offensive line has been eh. Amari Cooper's been eh. You know, like, there's been some question there. Obviously, Marshawn isn't the same running back that he was in his prime. So they do have to add some weapons around him. And it'd be nice to have a better defense. But the goal isn't to win today. It's to win day one in Las Vegas.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's got it in him. We were singing this guy's praises up and down. You know, what was it, 2 years ago, a year ago? You know, like, we were all about David Carr. Like, Derek Carr.
His brother's David.
Yeah, Derek Carr. And I just think it's not fair to be asking that question. There's so much turmoil around the team. Gruden has just not been what they wanted him to be so far, and I think he's still got a lot to prove. You know, when they signed him, when they brought him back, it was Gruden's coming back. The Tuck rule is not going to beat us. We're going to have round two. And it just hasn't been that, man.
No. Here's a question, though. Is John Gruden the head coach of the Raiders a year from now?
You got to give him, yeah, I mean, yeah. You have to.
I think you got to give him at least two seasons.
You can't just, this is not like the NBA. You can't just bring a guy in for a year and then cut him loose. I mean, you got to give him 3-4 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And are you surprised they're 0-3?
I mean, I don't love it. Surprise? No. Because I didn't think they were going to do anything this year, but 0-3 is kind of tough.
They have one of the craziest stats in the NFL. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down?
I'm ready, bro.
The 0-3 Raiders have not taken an offensive snap when trailing in the first three quarters this season.
Wow.
The 0-3 Raiders have not taken an offensive snap when trailing the first three quarters this season.
So you're just awful at closing.
They have been outscored 37-3 in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the worst margin in the National Football League and the worst for any team through the first three games of a season since the 2014 Jags.
Well, listen, hey, bro, I got Jarvis this week against the Raiders, and I'm hoping he lights it up, bro.
That is an amazing statistic. Only beaten out by ineptitude of the worst team in the NFL. That'd be the Arizona Steve Keim built Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, this is not close. I mean, there's not even much to say here other than the fact that this team has nowhere to go on either side of the football. David Johnson, he was awesome because you actually had talent around him to open up the field for him. He can't do anything if he's got eight guys chasing him down.
Yeah, they are historically bad. Okay, they have not move the ball almost at all. They have gained a total of 571 yards through three games.
Dude.
You have to go back 12 years to find a team who had gained the fewest yards. That'd be the Oakland Raiders in 2006 who gained 531 yards.
Oh. Right? Dude, come on, bro.
That's 12 years ago. The Cardinals are terrible. The way that they put in Josh Rosen, I thought was a travesty to him. At the end of a game against the number one defense in the NFL, my aren't we the NFC Central leading Chicago Bears? Rosen, I thought, was running for his life because Well, they have the worst offensive line unit in pass blocking. They're ranked 32nd. They're 25th in run blocking. They're the 25th defense as well, which means, yeah, pretty much across the board, you're awful.
Yeah, bro. And they've been awful.
They're not good. They are not good at all.
And that's the hard part. And I've said this several times. If you're a Cardinal fan, I don't know what exactly it is that you root for on Sunday. I'm really not sure because
the other team.
Like, right? Like, are you going out to Glendale, every week to root for whoever's coming in? Like, I don't know.
But that's the story of Arizona sports. You know this.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't go to see the Diamondbacks for the Diamondbacks. You go to see them like I go to see them for the Cubs. The Bears were in town this week, and there were a ton of Bears fans there. The Seahawks are in town this week. You and I both know that there's a ton of Seahawks fans there in Arizona. I mean, that's the story of professional sports in the great state of Arizona. And that's why the Arizona Cardinals are the worst team in the NFL. Number 5 is the Texans. 4 is the Bills. 3 is the 49ers. 2, the Oakland Raiders, and the worst team in the NFL is the Arizona Cardinals. Make sure you get online. TheMontyShow.com is where you find this show and those rankings. 46 minutes into the show, can we complain about the Cubs a little more? No.
Well, it's not two O's and Goose on this one. It's only you.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm just working over here. Cubs are still winning 6-2.
Right.
In the bottom of the 7th. I just thought I would throw that out there.
Yeah.
Before we get to the NBA, can we talk about this Brett Kavanaugh update? There's a 6th allegation against him now.
Dude.
We came into today with only 2 allegations of drunkenness and, we're watching a highlight of the St. Louis Cardinals falling down trying to score.
You're pathetic, bro. You don't lift.
Yeah, they want the Brewers to win. Anyway, I digress. I apologize for being an idiot. Brett Kavanaugh is trying to get confirmed as the next Supreme Court justice. And everything was fine until about a week ago when we started hearing allegations that he was a major drinker and partier in his late high school and all through college at Yale. And then we got some substantial allegations that said, hey, this guy sexually assaulted me. And then another woman came out and said, yeah, he touched me. And then today, just out of the blue, you get all of these allegations, including a woman who says that Brett Kavanaugh was a fall down angry drunk and he was in line and was involved in, allegedly drugging girls that would then be, sexually taken advantage of by a bunch of dudes. And there was a story about how Brett Kavanaugh and a friend of his allegedly assaulted a woman on a boat and were confronted over it and severely beaten, like all this crazy stuff. And so we're in this place in our country now where people are trying to figure out, do you believe Brett Kavanaugh or do you believe these women? And you're in a position where if you say, well, I believe Brett Kavanaugh, you're automatically anti-woman and you can't possibly support, a woman that's been sexually assaulted because you're a monger.
Yeah.
If you support the woman, you're an idiot who is just a liberal Democrat who's trying to undermine the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it just screams to me, why would any of these women dare come forward? Because you are going to get run through the ringer. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know why you would come forward.
Yeah, man, I don't know either. And obviously, I'm not going to say I can relate because I can't. I don't think anybody can unless you've been through it. And I don't know what they're trying to gain, if they're trying to gain anything, or if it's just a thing where, hey, I didn't know that this guy who did this to me back then is actually Kavanaugh today. I didn't put those two dots together. And they're just putting it together now because they saw his face and like it just kind of clicked. And they're like, oh, now I've put it together, I've got to say something.
Yeah.
But I think the savageness of this situation is that, number one, he is not the first or the last guy that's going to have people come out against him with these types of allegations. And the word that comes to mind is heinous because, frankly, it is heinous, the allegations.
The
and
things so, that Brett Kavanaugh is being accused of.
Yeah.
And this is my point. All I'm saying, like, specifically to this situation is I don't know why there's a rush to confirm this guy. now there's been five allegations of sexual misconduct. You got to investigate that.
Yes.
You have to, whether he did it or not, let's figure it out and just take the time to investigate.
This isn't a woman who, this isn't one singular woman who's coming out after 20 years of keeping it under, you know, the carpet and trying to make a ton of money. That's not what this is. I mean, you when you have now six different people coming out, I mean, you're right. You have to dig into this.
Yeah, and the other two women are already being attacked. The two newer women that came out today, one apparently had a restraining order against her boyfriend. The other one apparently sued her former employer and insurance company for sexual harassment. Like, they're just digging on these women. I can't imagine the position of a woman who's been sexually assaulted. And, you know, what a lot of these people are saying, and maybe I watch too much, you know, Law & Order SVU, I don't know. But what they're saying is that Brett Kavanaugh looks incredibly different today than he did in high school and college. Well, of course, because he went through puberty and became an actual, you know, adult male. He's aged, you know, he looks considerably different. So this incident on the boat where he's alleged to have attacked this girl with his friend.
Yeah.
You know, the girl goes home, you know, a male figure in her life goes down to the boat, beats the crap out of the two guys, leaves them there, whatever. He claims, this guy that came forward today with this boat allegation, claims that he only came forward because he saw the yearbook picture of Brett Kavanaugh on the news and said, hey, that's the guy that I beat the hell out of on the boat.
Yeah.
And so he came forward and called the Judiciary Committee.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly the point I was trying to make, right? Like, people are just putting dots together, you know, based on a yearbook photo. And that's why, you know, people who were
30 years ago.
Exactly. And that's why people who would defend Kavanaugh say, well, this is just a smear campaign and, like, it's very convenient and blah, 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 blah. So I don't know. This, my only point here is when we talk about landscape and getting people to vote and all this and, like, hey, are you interested in politics? This is exactly why I'm not too terribly into politics, because this is just some negativity that is just, like, next level.
But here's the problem with that. This is the Supreme Court of the United States. This is the most powerful position that you, essentially, that you can be appointed to. This is a lifetime appointment where you will be involved in setting the laws that involve, you know, female reproductive rights, abortion, that involve, like, all marijuana, like, everything, the Second Amendment, like, everything that impacts your life on a daily basis is essentially decided by the Supreme Court at one point or another. And so you're asking a guy in Brett Kavanaugh to go through the confirmation process to be a justice on the Supreme Court. And most women feel like he is going to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, which, you know, Roe v. Wade essentially legalized abortion in this country.
Yeah.
I think it's a big deal. If you have a guy
I'm
who,
not saying it's
if
not
you
a
have
big
a guy
deal.
that is accused of sexual assault and being a misogynist, which is something that was lobbed at him multiple times over the last 2 weeks, and you haven't seen his full record from his days in the White House, and the Republicans are trying to push through a vote tomorrow, that, like, you have five allegations, one woman is going to testify. One woman who's making allegations will testify in front of the Judiciary Committee. And if it goes the way the Republicans want, they'll vote as soon as she's done testifying. It just makes
but
no
I mean,
sense.
It's a joke. Like, what do you either are going to do it the right way or you're not. And they're clearly not.
But so then how can you say that you don't care about politics when we're the reason that those guys are in position? Because we as Americans have the right to vote. Now, we can sit here, and we're not going to, but you can talk about the Electoral College and how frustrating it is that, you know, Donald Trump, who I did not vote for, I'm an Evan McMullen voter, but he lost by 2.8 million votes, and he's still the president. You have a guy in you know, I think it was W lost the popular vote. Like, I mean, you have all these guys who've lost the popular vote who continue to go on to be president.
Yep.
You got to vote. You have to. If you do not vote, do not bitch and moan about what happens in this country.
I'm not I'm not specifically talking about voting. What I'm talking about is, you know, interest in the day-to-day of politics. This is one of the reasons that story you always tell about me saying, "Hey, let's not listen to it today." It is just so over the top negative, like everything. Notice everything you hear on CNN is negative. Just because that's our world, right? Like, it's not that it's not like a campaign by CNN to be Mr. Negative News
Network.
Well,
if you turn on Fox News, it's not exactly,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
but that's what
rosy.
I'm saying. So, like, it, at the end of the day, if you watch news, it's negative.
Yeah.
You have to choose to, like, filter it or, like, just listen to it every day and be in it and be obsessed
Although,
with it.
I will say Donald Trump did his first news conference today where he actually took live questions.
You're an idiot, Donald Trump.
Now I understand why they don't let him do news conferences.
Yeah, you're a complete idiot. Good Lord.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some real quick over-under wins in the NBA because thank the Lord that NBA season is here and training camps are open. I thought it was interesting today as an ESPN Plus subscriber. One, I got to watch Chelsea knock Liverpool out of the Carabao Cup, the League Cup. Which was amazing. Eden Hazard is the, I think, the best forward in the world right now. Like, as a guy that's not a pure striker and has been restricted by managers, this guy is just, it was awesome to watch, might I say. I was even a little aroused. Anyway, that was too far. But the cool thing is that the ESPN put out their projections for over-under win totals. First of all, let me just ask you straight away. What are you looking forward to in the NBA? Because there's a lot of change coming this season. So what are you looking forward to? What stands out to you? Because there's one or two teams that really stand out to me.
There's only one thing you need to know this year, and it's that the Lakers and the Celtics rivalry is back, and it's back for real. Because the Lakers and the Celtics will see each other this year, and it will be the return of the Kyrie versus LeBron rivalry. But furthermore, we will get back to two dynasties, two great teams in the NBA having a rivalry. We're not talking about the, you know, the Warriors who've been dominant for the last 5 years against some other team. These are two historic teams. Like, these are two teams that,
legacy NBA
that, like,
teams.
Like that you love and that I love and everybody loves. I'm looking forward to that kind of stuff again, having those storylines in the NBA. It's no longer just, well, what did KD do? Is he the MVP or is it Harden who can't play defense? I'm looking forward to having more in-depth conversations this year.
You know, and I'm not the biggest Bleacher Report fan in the world. Obviously, I have the app because I think you need it as a sports fan, but they keep putting these videos of guys up like James Harden and Luka Doncic today. Of them just taking practice three-point shots at practice today. And they're like, oh, look at James Harden already cooking. And it's like, dude, he's taking shots at practice. Like, what do you mean? Like, Luka Doncic hitting corner threes. He hit like five in a row. And they're like, oh, he's already comfortable in doubt. It's like, it's practice, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, NBA players can make 20, 30, 40. Steph hit 99 of 100 three-pointers he took last year in one session. 99 of 100.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to hit three-pointers at practice in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, like when we play basketball, we do 10 shots out of a corner. We generally make 6 or 7 out of 10, like, and we're amateurs. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that was a hype machine. I'm really looking forward to the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
I think the dynamics that are at play, this Gordon Hayward story, he signed an offer sheet with Anta, the shoe company Anta, today, which is pretty impressive. It's an 8-year deal that gives him his own shoe and a line of clothing. And if he winds up joining Anta, because he's a Nike athlete now and Nike has the right to match, he would join Klay Thompson and Rajon Rondo, who are both Anta athletes. That'd be a pretty nice pickup for them on the Boston Celtics. Now, Gordon's not, in my opinion, a guy that's going to sell a ton of shoes or clothes, but he's a pretty big name in the NBA, and he plays in Boston. He's probably the second best player on that team, on a team that's probably going to contend for an NBA championship this year.
Yeah, I don't love it for Gordon. It feels like you're going to Anta so that you can be a little bit more of a figure in a brand. Because let's be honest, at Nike, he's not really the biggest. He's not a big name at Nike.
But then is that what you say to Klay Thompson?
Yeah, I do. I do say that to Klay Thompson. He wouldn't be a big name at Nike.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, like
I'd
he's
be
not.
Surprised if Nike let Gordon Hayward get away.
Oh, I would be too. I'd be shocked. But I'm just saying, for Gordon himself, that's why you would go to Anta. That's why you would sign that deal, because there's three athletes at Anta in the NBA.
Well, and they have a few more than that. But he would probably be the second biggest name behind Klay. because I think he's a bigger name than Rondo, even though Rondo's on the Lakers.
He's a bigger name with Rondo, yeah.
Well, Rondo's going to start at point for the Lakers. Did you see that story? That he's their starting point guard. And it's
It pays to sit your rookie quarterback behind the starter, huh?
But they're saying that, A, Lonzo's not 100% healthy, and they're not sure he'll be 100% healthy at the beginning of the season. And they don't want to rush that because they need him for the second half, and then they need him for the next 5 years to really be a running mate. And I also think they'd like him to learn and, you know, kind of fly under the wing of Rajon Rondo.
Yeah.
Which is interesting in itself, but hey, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's talk about these win total projections by ESPN real quick. In the East, Boston's not number one. They project the Toronto Raptors to be number one at 55 wins. And with Kawhi Leonard, you hope, coming off of that injury, you would hope that he'd play 65 games.
Yeah.
Right?
I just disagree. They're not the best team in the East.
They're a better team this year than they were last year. I think Kawhi Leonard's an upgrade from DeMar.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're gonna push. I think the Boston Celtics will win 65 games. I think they're elite. If they stay healthy,
yeah,
which is a big question. I don't have any question that Gordon Hayward will play, you know, year one off of a broken leg, you're probably hoping to play 60 games, right? Anything over that is gravy. But, I mean, how many games do you expect Kyrie Irving to play?
Well, you're the guy who says he's only going to play, what, like 50?
50, 55 games.
Yeah, I think he's probably got... If anybody can get to 60, I mean, I think he's capable of doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they win the East. The Sixers are only projected to win 48 games.
Because
that's amazing. Joel Embiid is only projected to play 50 games.
That and the Celtics.
Yeah. And I still don't understand why the 76ers signed Wilson Chandler. That was a weird signing to me. Pacers at number four, they're projected to win 45 games. And there's a question here that I think is pretty interesting. Do you think that Victor Oladipo gets better this year than he was last year, which people are saying was a fluke in a career year for him?
I don't think it was a fluke. I if you follow Victor Oladipo, you see what he's doing in the offseason.
Yeah, he's busting his ass.
He's killing it. And I think he's going to come out and light it up. I mean, I think, you know, Stevenson leaving, I think is going to help him because Stevenson may have started and been a bench guy, kind of a hybrid guy for them, but him leaving is going to give Oladipo more touches. Oladipo is absolutely the guy. 100%. There's no more... You know, there's no other guy there that's taking touches, dude.
He's that guy.
I mean,
for sure.
And he's capable of doing it. I mean, he's lit it up. I don't know what more. Like, I think 25 a night is realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, the fifth best team in the East, they say, will be the Milwaukee Bucks at 45 wins. They added Brooke Lopez, which I think is a big upgrade for them. And with Giannis and company there, I don't see how they don't win 50 games.
Lopez can shoot the three.
Yeah. How do they not win 50 games? Like, that would be a hugely disappointing season.
Yeah, I they're that team that's still coming up. They're still trying to figure it out. They're still trying to learn how to close games and execute and not turn the ball over and just do all those little things that add up to a win at the end of an NBA game. They're still trying to figure that stuff out.
By the way, they say the Atlanta Hawks will be the worst team in the East with 25 wins.
I could see that.
The Bulls will win 28, and then the Knicks will win 30. So,
yeah.
If you don't make the playoffs, you want to be the worst team in the East.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Well, and that's how it's been the last few years, race to be the worst.
And then the West is really interesting because they say Golden State, no surprise, is only projected to win 58. They're going to win a hell of a lot more games than 58. Sorry. You add, DeMarcus Cousins to that team. I'm going to do my best never to say Boogie Cousins again.
Why?
Because I can't stand him, number one. He's a terrible, terrible professional. Really talented basketball player, but get out of here with Boogie Cousins. Shut up. Anyway, Golden State with DeMarcus Cousins. I think if he stays healthy and they win, and he probably won't be 100% until well into the second half, I think they easily win 60 games.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And I think they're going to beat up on a ton of teams just like they have been.
I would agree with that. The Jazz are projected to be the number two team in the West with 54 wins. That's interesting.
Dark horse.
The problem is, what do you do with Rudy Gobert in the fourth quarter? Especially if you are trailing. You can't
play him. You don't have a choice.
You can't play
him. Don't have a choice. I mean, you have to sit him.
Yeah.
But it's so situational, you know, and that's why I think Quinn Snyder being their coach is awesome because he understands that. He knows when to take him out and when to put him back in.
Rockets number 353 wins. I think they're going to regress. I really do. You essentially swapped Trevor Ariza for Carmelo Anthony. I think that's an upgrade. But I think Carmelo hurts you still to this day. It'll be interesting to see. You know, do they miss Luke Baumute? I don't know. We'll see. I think they'll miss Trevor Ariza rotationally on defense.
Yes.
We'll see. They're projected to win 53 games. I think that would be a gift. Here's the one I hate the most. They say that the Nuggets will be the fourth best team in the West. I hate that.
A lot of young talent.
I really hate that. We'll see. Wilson Chandler's not there anymore, so they're probably better. We'll see. T-Wolves, 49.6 wins.
This is the big mistake in this list. This is garbage right here. Because I don't think there's any way they're the same team they were without buckets, and I don't think that Andrew Wiggins...
What do they do with him? What do they do with... Because he's still there.
Oh, they'll trade him.
Tom Thibodeau is still trying to convince him to be a T-Wolf this year.
They will trade him. I mean, it's... I hesitate to say it's a done deal, but they're going to move him.
Yep.
I mean, you can't keep him on the roster.
Do you think Karl Anthony Towns is worth 50 wins with Wiggins?
No. Not just the two of them. You need a third. In the West, you need a third.
Yeah. Oklahoma City, 47 wins. I think that's probably right about well. Nerlens Noel will be nice for them. I don't know where Schroeder fits in on that team. That was kind of a weird pickup.
Man.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird pickup. And we'll see if, you know, what happens with Roberson when he comes back. That'll be interesting. Pelicans at 7. I like Julius Randle there.
I don't even agree with this. I think they're going to be higher than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I do, because I think Julius, is going to bring more for that specific team with their specific setup than Boogie Cousins did, you know?
What about Anthony Davis signing with LeBron's agency?
I think that's coming. I think he will
You think
be a
he's
Laker.
Going to the
yeah,
Lakers?
I do.
Oof. Portland, number 8 at 42. The Lakers are the 9th best team, so they will just miss the playoffs with 41 wins.
Only they won't.
Yeah, I think they're going
to. They're a playoff
team. I think
they're
going to win 45, 46 games.
They're a playoff team.
I would put the number at 46. On a whole number, I would put the Lakers over under at 46. They say the worst team in the Western Conference will be the Kings at 25 wins. The Suns will be 27 wins. The Mavs will be 32. Memphis will be 33. Clippers will be 36. How about the Spurs out of the playoffs at 10 at 38? Thank the Lord.
Yeah, I think they've got more potential than that.
Is there anybody that likes the Spurs?
What? No.
Don't say nice things about the Spurs. Cubs are melting down in the 8th. Oh, Cubs are melting down in the 8th. Bases are loaded. They give up 2. It's now 6-4. What am I supposed to do here? What am I supposed to do here?
Just be a pissed off Cubs fan who's going to tell me, oh, I told you so. They're awful. The Brewers are better. Drink your beer.
Thank you. Thanks for not being supportive. Not, you know, like, where's my bro hug? You know, like, what about, oh, dude, I'm sorry, your team's not going to make the playoffs, you know? Hey, look at that. Jason Hayward with a terrible throw to third base. Nice job. It actually wasn't a terrible throw. He hit the cutoff man who made a terrible throw, Javier Baez. So, what? Don't look at me like that. Just find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show, TheMontyShow.com. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.